Hey everybody, this is Lex Rofberg, and we're giving a little bit of a preamble before this episode as one of our High Holiday episodes. Initially, it was released in 2016/5777, right at the beginning of 5777, as we entered that new year. But we're re-releasing it this year because we think that these conversations about the Torah readings and Haftorah readings from the High Holidays are still relevant. And we didn't re-record new ones. We, as much as our ideas changed, they haven't changed so much that we have whole new takes on these texts. But we wanted to put them out there for you anyway, to, if you listened the first time, revisit, and if you didn't, to visit for the first time. So we hope you enjoy these, and send us whatever feedback you've got at dan@judaismunbound.com or lex@judaismunbound.com. Shana Tova, Happy New Year.
This is a special edition of Judaism Unbound, the High Holiday Readings. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Dan Levinson.
And I'm Lex Rofus.
And we're here with a special edition of Judaism Unbound today that actually is putting together a number of shorter pieces that you can find on our website, www.judaismunbound.com, in our special section on the High Holidays. We're going to be talking about each of the traditional readings for the High Holidays and looking at them with a Judaism Unbound perspective to try to find a way to see whether these traditional readings can still be relevant to us today as we potentially look at these holidays in a new way. So our next text is the Haftorah reading for the first day of Rosh Hashanah, which comes from the first chapter and a little bit of the second chapter of the book of Samuel, specifically up to chapter 2, verse 10. And the basic story that's told here is the birth story of Samuel, the upshot of which is that Samuel's mother was not able to conceive, and she prayed to God at the temple in Shiloh. And initially the priest was upset that she was praying for whatever reasons, and but eventually sort of acknowledged the idea that she was trying to get a son. And she promised that if she had a son, he would be dedicated to the work of God at the temple in Shiloh. And in fact, she does have a son, and after he's weaned, she brings him to the temple at Shiloh to begin his service, and he ultimately becomes the prophet Samuel. And I think that as we look at it in terms of its relevance to the High Holidays, I think one of the really interesting things that I've learned about this story from a modern scholarship perspective, and I'm really interested in mining it from a kind of meaning perspective, is that if you read this story carefully, you see strong signs, and I think there's quite broad scholarly agreement that this is the case, that this story is actually the birth story of King Saul, and not initially the birth story of Samuel, and that sometime later in the authorship of the Bible, it was transferred to Samuel, perhaps because Saul fell out of favor of the biblical authors, perhaps for some other reason. And the reason why this is thought to be the case is that if you look at the story of Samuel's naming, and now the word Samuel in Hebrew either can mean his name is God, Shmo El, or some version of God heard, Shama El. Linguistically, it really can only be one or the other. And in the explanation of his name, a different root keeps popping up, that which is the root sha'al, or requested, but it can also mean loaned or borrowed. And in explaining why she's going to name her son Samuel, his mother says, I prayed for him, I asked for him, God lent him to me, and I am now lending him back to God. You know, and in that discussion in the Hebrew, the word is versions of Shaul, and Shaul. The word Shaul is the last version of this that is used to sort of put the final stamp on his name. So his name is Samuel because Shaul, and Shaul is in Hebrew Saul. So it's bizarre that it's his name is Samuel because he is Saul. And you could make an argument that says, I asked and God heard, and therefore his name is God heard, but it doesn't really seem linguistically to be, you know, what's going on in the story. It would make much more sense if this was the birth story of Saul, and the mother said, you know, I asked, and he gave me, and I lent him, and he lent him back, and his name is Lent Him, right? You know, that's mm-hmm. really what it should be. And so for me, the way that I'm thinking about this in terms of the kind of atonement sort of ideas of the High Holidays is that we have this idea, one of the most famous prayers for the High Holidays is the Unetana Tokef prayer, who by fire, who by water, you know, all these various ways of death, basically. And, you know, this idea of kind of praying so that fate won't befall us. And so one of the ideas in the Unetana Tokef prayer is who shall be exalted and who shall be brought low. You know, and I think more broadly than, you know, who shall be exalted and who shall be brought low in terms of like something terrible will happen to them is more about whose story will be remembered and whose story will be forgotten and whose story will be taken away from him. You know, and that puts me in the mind, as our listeners would know that it often does, of the Broadway show Hamilton and this famous song at the end, Who Lives, Who Dies, Who Tells Your Story, and George Washington sings, you know, let me tell you what I wish I'd known when I was young and seeking glory, that you have no control, who lives, who dies, who tells your story, right? That there's some aspect of which after your death, you're kind of giving up the chance to control your story anymore. So, you know, in my reading, it's part of that is like, you better do in life what is going to kind of make sure that your story is likely to get told the way you want it to get told. And so, you know, for me, reading this particular Haftorah through the eyes of biblical criticism and modern scholarship, you know, doesn't take away some kind of powerful traditional meaning. It actually gives the story like a new meaning that is so feels even more relevant to me today for this era, both for us personally and for the story of Judaism looking into the future, that if we want it to have a certain meaning in the future, you know, we better be working on it now.
I totally agree with that. And it actually, it connects with a thought I had also about the names, actually. So I was working under the assumption of Shaul, of that's the name of Saul in Hebrew. And that's sort of the linguistic formulation that we have here. And that's what you described before. But what's fascinating is that if we take as a given, once again, there's debate about this, but I do think there's a strong case that this was originally written about Saul, and then it was changed to Samuel. You were just talking about how meanings can shift over time and how we tell a story can shift. I think that actually we get another new meaning when it's Samuel. So in the Hebrew, the name is Shmuel. You talked about how that could refer either to hearing God or to this question of borrowing or lending, which is what they allude to. I think it's fascinating because in the Torah portion for this same day of Rosh Hashanah, we have the story of Hagar and Ishmael. And the name Ishmael is incredibly similar to the name Shmuel. You can even hear it, but in the Hebrew, the way that the root system works, those are arguably the same root. Now where it gets tricky and dicey is that we're making the claim that the original root here was not the sound that means to listen or to hear, but actually Sha'al, which relates to borrowing, lending.
Well, that's what the text is claiming. I'm claiming the opposite,
sorry, yeah.
Right? I'm claiming that this is a false etymology that's given here.
Right. Okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah. If we opt into that Shema, then we see that a character who is depicted in one case as maybe he's not the antagonist. He's actually far less of an antagonist than the rabbis make him out later. But in the Torah, he is banished and discarded from the story. And that's Yishmael. In this situation, a character with such a similar name, Samuel, Shmuel, is placed at the center and almost seems... what I'm arguing is that you could see this as almost a recentering of Ishmael, in a sense. You could see this as perhaps maybe if Ishmael himself doesn't get to have a place, at least his name sort of lives on in a certain way. And once again, I don't know that that's really the original meaning of this story, but I think it demonstrates how the different ways we tell it and even the different names we use can yield all sorts of interesting interpretations.
I think you're saying something really beautiful, which I hadn't seen before, but you're saying that, because a lot of times we talk about the connection between the Torah portion and the Haftorah portion, and traditionally the Haftorah portion is some kind of echo from the Torah portion. And traditionally, I think the idea here is that Sarah couldn't conceive and prayed and she got a child, and in the Haftorah portion, Hannah couldn't conceive and she prayed and she had a child. And I feel like you're finding a different echo, which is only visible through source criticism, which is that in the first story, Ishmael was thrown out and kind of in some ways thrown out of the story. And that's very explicit. And in this text, Saul is thrown out of the story and that's hidden. But once we uncover the fact that Saul was thrown out of this story, then we're actually seeing a beautiful echo from the Torah portion to the Haftorah portion. And that really centers us on this question of, is it all right to throw people out of stories? Is it natural to throw people out of stories? And if it is, how do we make sure that we're not thrown out of the story today? Or how do we maybe more intentionally throw people out of the story that we don't want anymore? You know, I don't know. But I think it's really fascinating. One thing I want to add, though, too, is that one of the other beautiful things that I see here is that you could have imagined that if Saul fell out of favor, they would have just thrown his story out of the story. But instead, they threw him out of the story, but they kept the story. And I feel like there's actually something worth thinking hard about there in terms of Jewish, you know, the Jewish tradition of storytelling, which is that even if we have a reason for not liking a certain character anymore and wishing that that wasn't part of our story, we try not to get rid of the story altogether. Instead, we try to repurpose the story in some way, whether that's a kind of a midrash or even just changing the names of the characters. Somehow, this intense yearning to hold on to our stories, even if we have to reinterpret them so crazily that they don't even make sense linguistically anymore, that we want to do that. And I think that's an interesting thought to have on a holiday like this.
Yeah, I think so too. And with that, we're going to close out our reflections on the Haftorah reading for the first day of Rosh Hashanah. We hope you've enjoyed this episode, this mini episode. We also hope that you'll check out our three other recordings of textual reflections related to the text we read on Rosh Hashanah. And there's also going to be very soon 4 episodes, 2 Torah readings and 2 Haftorah for Yom Kippur that will be coming out. So we hope you'll give those a listen. You can do so on iTunes or Google Play, wherever you typically access Judaism Unbound, or through our website, judaismunbound.com, under our High Holidays Unbound project in the Listen and Learn track. So with that, this has been Judaism Unbound.